right, welcome to another episode of Piecing It Together, the podcast where we take a look at a new movie and try to figure out what movies inspired it. And today on the show, we are going to be talking about Space Jam, A New Legacy. Yeah, this movie is so freaking ridiculous, but we're going to have a really good time talking about it. Joining me is Grace Aki from Tell Me on a Sunday. And she jumped right on the opportunity to talk about Space Jam, A New Legacy. And I'm glad because we had a really fun time talking about it. It's we'll get to it in the conversation. This freaking movie. Before we get to the conversation, though, I do want to remind you all, as always, to make sure you are subscribed to Piecing It Together wherever you listen to podcasts. You can rate us and review us over on Apple Podcasts or Podchaser, and of course, find us on all the other podcast apps, Spotify, Pocket Casts, you name it. You can also follow us on social media at Piecing Pod, and don't forget to join our Facebook group, Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces, where we continue the conversation about all the movies we talk about here on the show. And yes, we've already had a few fun threads going on about Space Jam. A lot of fun always to be had there in the Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces group. So, with all that said, we got a nice long conversation about Space Jam, so let's get into it. All right, so this should be fun. We're going to talk about Space Jam, A New Legacy. And joining me today is Grace Aki from Tell Me on a Sunday. Grace, how's it going?
It's going well. I mean, we've talked about this film before its release. Mm-hmm. We saw it on the exact same day. I'm super excited. This will be fun. Thank you so much for having me. Sure. I'm so blessed and excited.
This will be a lot of fun. Before we get into the ridiculousness that is this movie, why don't you tell my listeners a little bit about who you are and what you do over on your podcast?
Yeah, so I'm kind of like a storyteller in general because, I don't know, when you grow up in the South, that's kind of all you do. I'm a New York-based comedian, actor, what have you. And on my show, we basically, instead of just like a normal interview show with like people that I find super creative and talented and smart and funny, I'd rather ask them the stories behind a lot of their projects and what they do in life, because I just find that more compelling. Like, you could tell me this is what I've got coming up, but I'd rather you tell me a story about that one day that you were on set and, I don't know, you cried yourself to sleep. Who knows?
Sure.
Yeah. Because we all do it. It's all relatable. So that's what that show is about. But I also do like a Broadway radio where it's like every single day there's new news coming up, all that great stuff. So yeah. That's a little bit about me.
That's awesome. Your show is really good. I was listening to it just the other day. And everybody's got a story behind what they're doing, whether they even realize it or not, like, you know, but once they're kind of asked the questions, out it comes, you know.
Yeah, and I think that it's also like a lot of times the people that tell stories a lot, I mean, everybody's story is important, but usually it's the people that don't often share that I'm like, oh yeah, you may not realize like you've got a lot to say. And so I hopefully provide that kind of platform for my friends.
Speaking of stories, did you know that Space Jam, A New Legacy has 10 credited screenwriters?
No.
That is not a good sign.
One for each Looney Tune?
I guess that. I guess that's how it works out. And zero for LeBron's character? I don't know. But yeah. Let's start this thing off by asking you, Grace, why did you want to cover this movie? Why did you volunteer so graciously to join me to talk about Space Jam, A New Legacy?
Okay, well, I've been looking forward to this film for many, many years. You know, they've talked about it since kind of like the end. I mean, they didn't try to recreate or do a sequel right when the first one came out. Mm-hmm. And so when there was even like the joke or blog or Reddit thread about the possibility of a Space Jam 2, everybody was like, hold on, what? And then when they announced LeBron, it was like, oh, well, that's the only guy that could do it. Sure. So I got really excited. And so for the past like 5 years, I would say, I've been building this movie up because I really enjoyed the first one. I'm not like an insanely big basketball fan, but I love things that kind of like combine a bunch of stuff in the zeitgeist. And I think that it perfectly did that in the first one. And we'll get into why That didn't happen in the second. Sure. But I, yeah, I've just always really had a fondness for this. So saying that they were going to make a second one, I knew that they couldn't recreate the magic of the first, but I was curious to see what they were going to do.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I recently rewatched the first one for an episode of Awesome Movie or the other movie podcast that I produce and didn't quite live up to my memories of it. Not that I loved it back in the day, but I, you know, I've always been a fan of Looney Tunes, and so I certainly remember laughing, and I think I had a t-shirt, a Space Jam t-shirt at some point, so I was definitely into it at the time. It was very, very ridiculous, and I guess I knew that going into this. I just didn't think it would be as soulless, I think is the number one word I would use for this sequel. It doesn't seem to understand what's great about the Looney Tunes is the number one most important problem with this movie.
Yeah. I mean, that.
Yes, absolutely. Okay, I've got a bunch of puzzle pieces here. I'm sure you got some puzzle pieces there.
Yes,
we will get into what's so bad about this, all the many things along the way, and maybe some good things. I don't know. We'll see. But why don't we just jump into some puzzle pieces? What do you have for your first one?
Okay, so I wonder if our puzzle pieces are going to match because
I'm sure there'll be at least one. Yeah,
at least one. I wrote Wreck-It Ralph.
Okay.
So Wreck-It Ralph is kind of one of those movies where they got to take, especially in the second one. Let me clarify: Wreck-It Ralph 2, Breaking the Internet, because this is when they were like, okay, we're going to break the internet, kind of like the algorithm bit of Don Cheadle.
Sure.
I almost called him Don Quixote. That would have been a better movie. But Academy Award winning Don Cheadle playing this villain. And so like they kind of have this idea that like, you know, what if we go back in and then we, you know, the internet is kind of in charge of everything. But oh, no, what happens? Like we basically use pixelated images and kids are like, that's what the internet is. And that's what they kind of do in Wreck-It Ralph. And then at the same time, you've got all these IPs coming together. Like I remember the Disney princesses were very much featured, but they all looked like Disney princesses, like because Disney's in charge of the film. So I thought if they're going to do a similar thing where we knew there was going to be a bunch of Warner Brothers IP in this new movie, that they would mirror that and say like, oh, this is what these characters look like, not this is Dragon Con, no shade to Dragon Con, but you've got cosplayers, you know what I mean? And sometimes cosplayers can look identical, incredible, like makeup work, all that great stuff, right? But like, it's not the same as putting somebody in a stormtrooper outfit where it's like, that's a stormtrooper.
Right.
You're putting people in a costume to look like Clockwork Orange in a children's film, which is a choice, okay? When you could have just extrapolated images from that film. I mean, they have the budget. It just looked cheap. And so I know with a cartoon, you know, you can make the Looney Tunes look like Looney Tunes, right? But in Wreck-It Ralph, they were able to make the Disney princesses look like that because that's what they look like all the time. And they didn't execute that in this film, which was really off-putting for the big court scene where they're like, you know, with the big game, you're seeing all of these characters doing the same three motions, like where they were day players, basically.
That's
and
the
then
worst
clapping
part.
And cheering, right? I was like, am I crazy? Or are they literally just recycling this image, which makes the film look even cheaper? And guys, you're Warner Brothers. You've had years to do this. You've got like 100 producers, apparently 10 writers credited. You know what I mean? It's like, how did this happen? So that's my first little puzzle piece of like what could have and should have, but also what they tried to do.
I agree with everything you're saying there. And yeah, it almost like turns into this uncanny valley thing where they just look inhuman because of the, your brain knows what the real character looks like, but then it's this cosplayer version. And then that weird recycled animation, which kind of reminded me of like sports video games where like you just see like that flat crowd just on loop in the background.
Oh,
you
like
know?
An esports game. Yeah. Like that. Yeah. Totally. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And yeah, it's a really weird choice, especially when like narratively it would have made more sense to to somehow like key out backgrounds and have clips from the original movies of the characters in the background, because it's supposed to be this serververse thing, you know, which I can't believe I'm saying, but it's supposed
We're going to use all the buzzwords. Algae rhythm, serververse.
Oh, it's freaking insane. But yeah, as to the puzzle piece, I would say, you know, Wreck-It Ralph 2, absolutely. And I'll just jump right into one of the other more obvious ones, which is Ready Player One, which does the same thing of just, you know, mashing together all of these IPs and hoping that something will come out of it. And I would say Ready Player One is a little bit more successful. Still not a great movie, but at least there was a little bit of an excitement from fans of like, oh, there's this character that I love and know. There's another character that I love. There's another character. And it didn't feel as forced or as fake as it does here. And part of that is, like you were saying, with like the very cosplay-ish. I mean, even King Kong doesn't look like King Kong. And that's a CGI character.
And we just had a King Kong movie come out. So it's like, guys, it's fresh on the brain on HBO. We can refer to the original. Like,
exactly.
It's not hard.
Very, very, very strange choices in the way that they, like, I get the idea of bringing in IP. I mean, you know, retro is very, very in right now, and nostalgia and all that. Like, I get the idea of bringing all the characters in. It's just not doing anything with it, and the method in which they did it, it just doesn't work as well as it did in Wreck-It Ralph or in Ready Player One, really.
Yeah, it makes me sad because they definitely could have. That's the only reason. It's not like this is, you know, this is not A24 trying to do like a court, like an interesting dark spin on it. This is this is Warner Brothers being able to pull all of their guns out, and they didn't. It was very strange.
I can't wait for a future where 24 makes a movie where all of their characters come. No, I really don't.
Ari Aster trying to do Space Jam 3.
Oh,
Midsommar.
Can you imagine film Twitter? I mean, can you imagine?
It was just, yes, ugh. I invite it.
Yes, there you go. All right, what do you got for your next piece?
Okay, so I think we've got to start going down the rabbit hole of bad dads. And I just immediately went to Hook because that's the next piece of this puzzle, right? We've got to talk about the fact that like LeBron is playing LeBron, but he's also, because he's a father, he does drill his kids in basketball. We know this to be true. Anybody that's watched him talk on any show, he talks about like how important that is for his kids and how much they quote enjoy it. I don't know. and I'm like, okay, sure. I would never want to be LeBron's kid on a court, but that's just me. That's just me, little old me. But yeah, so in Hook, you've got a dad not being there for his son, especially during do you remember the baseball game scene where he hires a guy to film the baseball scene?
Right.
Like the baseball game for the son. And he's like, dad, you could have just been there or whatever. And then like, he's like, sorry, son, I had my giant cell phone strapped to my face for that like big corporate whatever. I mean, I don't know. He's an attorney. I don't know. Anyways. And then he, you know, goes into the world of like Neverland, and then he transforms into Peter Pan because he was always Peter Pan. It was always within him. And so they kind of do that here. And then the whole point, even the lines might be similar. I'm not even kidding. For Don Cheadle's character as Algae Rhythm and Dustin Hoffman's Captain Hook, where they, you know, put the boy under their shoulder and they're like, man, if only your dad could see you now. And you're like, and it's like, okay, I guess that is it. You know, he tries to spin it and turn the kid against his dad. And it like works in both movies. The only problem is that we get to see in Hook, we get to see all of these moments where Robin Williams, who's incredible, gets all these like lighthearted moments and all of these like funny, like, oh my God, he's a human. Like he's a real person. He has to grow and have fun. And the only time we see that from LeBron's character of LeBron is as a cartoon.
Right.
So we don't get to see the human version of that, which sucks because we know LeBron to be so expressive and funny. Let's like go back to him in Trainwreck. I thought, I was like, okay, this solidified LeBron playing LeBron, but being funny. And like, you know, he's telling, oh gosh, now I can't think of his name. He was on Barry. He was on SNL. Bill Hader. He's playing. Yeah, yeah. He's going off of Bill Hader's character. And they do such a good like buddy comedy bit in that movie that I was like, oh, Space Jam's going to be fine. Literally, I told myself, like, so what, 6 years ago? I was like, he's going to be all right. I'm down for it. And then they have LeBron playing LeBron in Space Jam 2. Not at all soft, not at all funny. The only times he does that is when he's a cartoon. And the moments with his son are really depressing. And so, you know, I was more interested in his wife. I was like, where's she at? She's
right.
Funny and interesting. And yeah, so I don't know. That was just kind of like a weird puzzle piece that I think we have to talk about the bad dad trope. Because sure. That's what they were trying to go for here. But at the same time, I was like, why didn't you play with the fact that, like, LeBron's interesting? I think that goes back to the script. The 10 writers did not nail that.
Right.
Because they never let him be funny.
Yeah, that's the thing. As an outsider looking in, because I don't follow basketball at all, and I know who LeBron James is, but, like, I don't know his personality, really, or any of that. And so going into this, it's like, okay, so this LeBron James guy is just all business all the time and is kind of a dick. And, like, that's who this person is, apparently, according to this movie, because you never get any kind of warmness towards his kids at all. It's just all business nonstop the whole time. And I don't know, you know, what the desire is to not show that, to not have him be fun, except for, like you said, sometimes while he's animated, and that's it.
Yeah, and I think that the whole point in Space Jam 1 is that, you know, even though Michael Jordan was not a great actor,
sure.
He also wasn't a great baseball player, but he joked about himself. I mean, that was a big bit of, like, our you know, sports history. We've got the greatest basketball player in the world, and he chooses to play baseball, and he sucks.
Right.
Like, he made fun of himself in such a real way. And, like, the only times where they kind of, quote, made fun of LeBron was they were like, oh, yeah, I'm taking my talents back to Miami. I'm taking, you know, I'm going back to Akron. And it's like, yeah, we know that.
Right.
But like, let's
joke
about a thing.
You're bumming us all out, man.
You know, and when the beginning, exactly. But, like, the beginning of the film, you know, we set up how amazing LeBron is. We didn't have to set up how amazing Michael Jordan was, because he is Michael Jordan. And we feel that way about LeBron. But all of a sudden you start getting in your head and you're like, is he the greatest of all time? Because they're telling me he is. And that makes me think that they're having to tell me. Like, as soon as Algae Rhythm is, like, looking at the serververse and he's like, here he is, LeBron James, the GOAT, King James. You don't have to tell me. Just show a photo.
Right.
He's that big. You know what I mean? He's that amazing. So, I don't know. If you have to tell me, it's probably not clear.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that you're starting off on the wrong foot, and it's gonna be tough to recover from there. But I'm gonna take it back to Don Cheadle's character for my next puzzle piece here,
good.
I'm gonna go with the Lawnmower Man from 1992. Do you have that on your list?
No, please, okay. Please tell me what.
Yeah, the Lawnmower Man is an absolutely ridiculous movie of the 90s that, you know, should probably stay in the 90s and not be talked about again. But basically about a weirdo guy who kind of becomes an AI, who exists in this virtual reality world, who can do any and everything and becomes a big nuisance for the protagonist of the film. And Don Cheadle is going full fledged Lawnmower Man. I didn't write down the name, but I think Jeff Fahey, just going completely nuts and going as big can be, very much like the Lawnmower Man character in that movie. And just everything with the cyberspace CGI world of this whole algorithm internet server thing, it feels very much like it's of a time like the 90s, where we didn't really understand computers or the internet or any of that quite yet.
Yes.
And building it up out of that. And it's like, back then it made sense. Like, nobody really quite fully understood what it was. Now, I mean, and this movie seems to know that everybody knows everything about computers. I mean, look at the kid. He's building games in his room or whatever. He's got multiple monitors and all that stuff. Like, people understand computers now. And I feel like an old guy even just referring to them as computers. But it doesn't need to be so weird and silly the way that we portray the goings-on of a computer. This movie goes full Lawnmower Man with that.
That's really funny. I think that in the theater even, I went, it's already dated. How did they do that? It's already dated.
Yes.
And we all, you're so right. Like, we all have the capacity to know all these words. And all I kept thinking was, like, kids little kids know more about the algorithm than this movie.
Yeah, absolutely.
Joking. And so, yeah, it was just kind of like a strange choice.
Yeah. There was a weird little mini controversy on you know, I don't know if it would be film Twitter, maybe whatever video game Twitter is, but with that Game Boy in the beginning where they were like clearly not using Game Boy graphics for the Game Boy. It's like, did they think we wouldn't know? I mean,
did they? Yeah. I mean, like, we played it recently.
I mean, they just, I think, have no trust in their audience when they're putting something like that on screen. But just one of many issues with the movie. But what do you have for your next puzzle piece?
All right. So I think that we should skip to the newest Mulan, the live action Mulan.
Okay.
That's my next piece. The reason I say this is because another from my childhood, Mulan the cartoon, being a Japanese American little girl, the only cartoon that I felt like I could dress up as and would not be insensitive, even though I am in no way Chinese, was dressing up as Mulan for one particular Halloween. Mm-hmm. And I was obsessed with that movie. And I thought there's so many funny parts of it. Obviously, maybe Eddie Murphy playing Mushu Pork is not like the thing, you know, don't love it. But I loved what the movie said and did for, you know, little girls' empowerment and all that stuff. All that to say, the things that work about that cartoon were like the comedic elements, which of course, like, I'm sorry to beat you over the head with that right now today, but this is how I feel about it. Were all the comedic elements of, like, you know, her running around, like, you know, the silly parts of her, like, running into the river naked. And then the other guys being like, I'm king of the rock. And she's like, well, this is not the space for me to expose myself. But, you know, there are just so many silly, silly moments intertwined with some really heartbreaking stuff. And then the music. The music is killer in that one. I think it's Alan Menken, I'm assuming. And it's just such a fun film. They're going to remake it, right? They're doing the live action. And I was like, cool. They're going to do a live action one. Hopefully, they'll take out racist crap and add in, and because they said they were okay, they have an Asian team, none of the writers, they were all like white dudes, but like they said that they were going to try to be particularly careful with this piece. Okay, fine. So what we get is a not funny, no music, boring live action remake, and I'm like, who's this for? Because the kids that my age that are paying to watch this film on Disney Plus, thanks for making me pay $22, you know, to watch this, want the fun and funny and the music, but also like the heart of the movie. And they didn't do that. They tried really hard to make it serious. And now I'm like, well, now nobody's going to be interested. Thanks a lot. Now nobody's going to greenlight this type of movie in the future, blah, blah, blah. So I say that to say, I felt like in this remake, the piece that was like missing was the fact that they didn't lean into what worked about the first one, because it shouldn't have worked. Let's be very clear. It should have been embarrassing. Nobody, I mean, it should not have worked. Michael Jordan's not a great actor. You know, putting in the Looney Tunes next to a guy who, quote, doesn't have acting experience. And then being like, what if we just added Bill Murray and Wayne Knight? Mm-hmm. And like, you know, like funny white guys of the 90s. But somehow it made sense because like he was able to make fun of himself. The music is killer. And I don't want to like gas up R. Kelly because that's not a space where we ever need to do that.
Sure, sure.
We're not going to do that on the show today. But I have to say, the soundtrack's pretty iconic, right?
Right.
So you had the opportunity. Who is LeBron's best friend? Can you guess? It's Drake. What did we just have come out like 2-3 years ago, Spider-Verse, with the one of the greatest soundtracks of any superhero movie of all time? And I would consider it one of the best soundtracks in like the past like 10 years. We have the capability like to make this just as iconic with totally different score, with a totally different, you know, we don't need to do I Believe I Can Fly. Mm-hmm. We can have another song.
Sure.
The first song that we got, I believe, was when they were training the Looney Tunes, and it was kind of like subtle. The music in the first one, you're like, as soon as the film starts, you're like, okay, cool, we're at Moron Mountain. We're back at his childhood, blah, blah, blah. All of the music really formed, and I would say Cameron Crowe levels of, you know, telling the story. I really would.
That's big. That is big.
I know. Well, I met him once and we had a good exchange. Nice. And I'm obsessed. Anyways.
It is a great soundtrack, though. They
it's
original.
A great soundtrack. And so that's why I'm saying the music and the comedy is what worked, just like in Mulan. And they said, you know what? We're going to not care about that at all. And yeah, we'll see what happens. And I'm like, well, guys, like, take what works in the first one.
Right.
It's okay. I don't need you to try to regurgitate the same plot. Mm-hmm. I like that they were going to try to like build some kind of story between the father and the son and LeBron's legacy, because this is a new legacy. Let's be clear. It's not Space Jam 2. It's Space Jam: A New Legacy. But the legacy sucked butt. Right. So like, if you're going to go back to the first legacy, my guy, I don't know. That's the puzzle piece. Move on.
You know, I totally agree. The music and the fun are the two things they left behind in bringing this I guess, franchise back. But the other thing that they left in the past is the Looney Tunes. They're basically just side characters in this new one that that are a little bit of comic relief here and there, but they get nothing to work with as far as the story is concerned. Like, even Bugs Bunny, who is, of course, you know, the main one, barely has anything resembling any kind of a character arc or anything like that. It's like, why don't they do more with the Looney Tunes? They are what we're here to see inherently. Of course, LeBron James, but like, it's a Looney Tunes movie. When are we going to get another one of those? Do something with the Looney Tunes.
That's a good point. I didn't really notice it in the film because I was distracted by so many plot lines I didn't care about. Mm-hmm. But that's a really good point. I forget that, you know, because I wasn't like a big Looney Tunes fan. Mm-hmm. That was one of the main reasons I was like, I wasn't interested in seeing the film when I was young, because I didn't care about them. But once I saw them, I was like, oh, this is like fun. Like, they all have personalities.
Right.
Like, you're going to call Zendaya in to be a more appropriate Lola Bunny, like being like, she's sporty. Cool. She's going to look sporty. She's not going to look like she's just came off from cheering for the Lakers and then picked up a basketball one day and became amazing. Like, you know what I mean? It was great. And so you're so right. Like, I kind of wish that storyline had made it back in.
I'd also say, speaking to the soundtrack really quick, I wonder if that speaks a little bit to the fact that nowadays, with the state of the music business, if there's just not that many recognizable artists like that make music that everybody could know. I mean, you know, again, not to pump up R. Kelly here, but R. Kelly is a freaking superstar at the moment when he made that song. You know, some of the rap tracks on there, you know, featuring LL Cool J and some of these people who are just like, everybody knew them. I'm not sure who's on this soundtrack. I mean, I heard the songs during the movie, but I'm not even sure if I recognize anyone.
I'll point to one thing. Did you see Black Panther?
Yes.
Kendrick Lamar killed that soundtrack.
Sure.
And everyone's familiar with like his stuff. But even then, like, there was still, even in the 90s, there was still a huge divide between like what was considered pop radio and what was like R&B and rap. And I would say that that's totally flipped now.
Yeah.
Because we've decided, rightfully so, that like this music should not just be like, well, you guys listen to that, and then like we will. Who is no stop?
Sure.
Like popular music's popular music, and so that's why I point to like the Spider-Verse soundtrack, is because like they even had oh my god, Sunflower by Post Malone.
Right.
Post Malone's such a superstar, and like they could have had any number of artists. And the fact that like LeBron is so influential in the hip hop world is why I thought that this was such a miss. Mm-hmm. Because if you watch his show, like the Barbershop Show on HBO, he has a new, you know, singer, songwriter, performer, rapper every single week when he was on, because he also produces Drake. He produces other people. And so I just, I thought that it was so strange because he is a part of that world. I mean, he has his own, like, not Jordans, but he has LeBrons. He's very influential in the hip-hop world, especially in, like, the sneakerverse, if you will. so, yeah, it was just weird.
By the way, Post Malone, also basically a real-life Looney Tunes, so he would have fit really well in this. So
yes. And I know he listens to this pod.
Yes. Yeah,
he would love to hear that.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I'm going to go on to another puzzle piece here and talk about some movies that I also didn't like. And I think they fit really well as puzzle pieces here. Especially after I found out that the director, Malcolm D. Lee, did Scary Movie 5. I'm going to talk about basically the modern state of spoof movies due to Jason Friedberg and Aaron Seltzer and the various blank movie spoof movies, the epic movie, the date movie, the all of those kind of movies. They all kind of spanned out from Scary Movie, although they're not by the Wayans brothers. and they all seem to just be totally fine with settling for, and this goes back, of course, I'm talking about the IP referencing of all these WB characters that we talked about a little bit earlier in the podcast, but they seem completely okay with just referencing these famous things, but not actually doing anything with it, not making a joke, not being clever about it. We're referencing Mad Max Fury Road. We're referencing The Matrix. None of it is a interesting or new joke or anything, anything that is clever or any of those 10 writers did any kind of work to kind of work into this particular universe. And I think that that's the kind of the approach that those guys took to those epic movies and the date movies and all that stuff. It's like, here's all these things that are in the zeitgeist. You remember this, don't you?
Yeah.
Moving on to the next one. And that's also, as far as it goes.
Weird to, I mean, Mad Max Fury Road is an epic film, but it's kind of weird to be like, this is what we're going to use as part of our, like, most influential canon.
Right.
Like, Matrix, and then Casablanca, and then being, like, Mad Max. Those are the three, right? It's like, what? I don't know. And then using all of those Batman characters, like, Tim Burton's Batman, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, having that guy, like, dress up as, like a D-list Danny DeVito in the Penguin outfit. It was so strange. And it's, like, it's not these actors' fault. It really isn't. It's a misstep on the company. No, but you're totally right. But I will say, when Mad Max, that bit, like, kind of, like, started, that was when, because they were trying to gather all the Looney Tunes all over the, like, you know, Warner Universe, that was when the music kicked in, and I was like, cool, I'm hyped, I'm ready.
Finally.
Like, this is finally. What, are we 40 freaking minutes into the film?
Mm-hmm. About like, that.
Right. So it was so weird to be like, oh, I'm finally enjoying this. It was for 3 minutes. Good.
Yeah.
It was just so weird. And I will say, like, I want to shout out to the fact that, like, I went to see this movie in a theater at 11 a.m. on a Saturday morning. And two rows in front of me were, like, a row of kids. And, like, there was a mom in a Toon Squad. No, she was in a Monstars jersey. And the dad was in, like, a Toon Squad jersey. And so, obviously, they were excited about this. But all the kids, I mean, they were kind of, like, talking a little bit. Their commentary was sometimes more interesting than the script. And there was the part where they're, like, the camera, like, goes to, you know, audience members particularly, and they're showing a lot of, like, the Batman characters for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
And then they quickly turn, and then the little shrunken Monstars team for, like, 2 seconds. Did you see that? Where, like, the little characters were the same as, like, the shrunken little aliens from the first Space Jam?
The
kids screamed. They were so excited to see that. And that's how I said, like, wow, the legacy of that film, if you know it, you know it really well. So seeing somebody like Bill Murray pop out, seeing somebody like, you know what I mean? That would have been really fun and funny. And then the spoiler of it, to have Michael B. Jordan come out, was such an epic moment.
Yeah, that was a funny moment. I wrote down that there was like three good laughs in this movie. That's one of them for sure.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Exactly. So it was just funny because I was like, even these 4 or 5-year-old kids missed the callbacks to the first movie. So you gave them a tiny taste of it and they freaked out. What you could have done with this film.
Sure.
Such a bummer.
Absolutely. Well, what do you got for your next piece?
I'm going to go to this is my final piece,
okay.
I guess you could say. I might have one more, but it kind of enveloped itself in Hook. But Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
Okay.
What a perfect, like, combination of, like, having straight character, like, comedically, and then also all of these funny. And you're so right. Roger Rabbit, Bugs Bunny, they had such a story arc in those films. And so, like, I felt like in the first Space Jam, Bugs Bunny got to have a lot of that. You know, we got to follow them back to Michael Jordan's house, and they had the interaction with the kids when they're trying mm-hmm. to get the basketball. And then in this, in Roger Rabbit as well, like, you've got all of these tunes that have distinct personalities that are helping execute the thing. And then, like, the villain is just so much better as a villain. Like, I felt like Don Cheadle wasn't, like, he's an incredible actor, so this is not me knocking him. He doesn't need, like, you know, he's got accolades. He's amazing. It felt like he was, like, phoning it in.
Sure.
Like he didn't like that script. I don't know, but I just picture all of, like, the great, like, cartoony villains of other films, especially that do this type of thing. And I think about the fact that, like, we got to have in Roger Rabbit, like, Christopher Lloyd giving the performance of his life, you know, not caring that this is, like, a quote kids movie.
Yeah.
It was like, this is it. And so I just loved how the stakes were raised so much in that one that I thought that that's what this film would also bring. I thought that they would try to copy that, and then they did not. But that to me is, like, that other puzzle piece of, like, where very simple storyline. You know, dad or somebody needs something, schlubby, like a middle-aged dude, I guess. And then, like, LeBron is schlubby, LOL. and then, you know, an incredibly, like, just, like, dumb villain. Like, what is his point? He's like, right. And then everyone will respect me. And I'm like, dude, like, this is some toxic masculinity. Like, just, like, go to therapy.
Sure.
You know, have a tea. Like, you're going to be fine. And so, yeah, like, that's just kind of, like, the other piece of, like, where this could go well and where it could go wrong.
Yeah, I think, you know, Don Cheadle's a great actor, but I think he's just painfully miscast here. It just, they needed someone who could just go wacky and animated. You know, someone who could just go crazy with it. And he always feels restrained in this. Like, he's trying to go crazy, but it's just not him. It just doesn't make sense for him.
Like,
as an
Danny
actor.
DeVito
sure.
being this, like, gross dude, which, by the way, there is a photo, I will leak it, of me dressed up as that character.
Oh,
I don't know what party this was for, but I chose to be that. I had, like, a purple suit and a big cigar hanging out of my mouth.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. It was beautiful. I was very attractive that night. But yeah, so you've got this, like, gross dude who just wants to, like, make money in the universe on his moron mountain.
Hmm.
How stupid is that? It's stupid. And that's why we love it. Don Cheadle living in a computer with, like, this adorable little, like, sidekick. I was just, and then he also, like, to your point, that he never got tuned. He got, like, kind of CGI thick-necked.
Right, right.
It's like he went and said, like, okay, what if I did CrossFit for a month and then was tall? And we were like, okay. But he was never silly or toony and gross. And it's a kid's movie. Like, we want to hate you.
Yeah,
you were just annoying.
I'm just realizing right now, too, that his little sidekick, he is kind of a cute little character. But in the design of him, he's too robotic to make a toy out of, I think. There's too many moving parts and stuff. Like, he wouldn't work in the real world. That's short-sighted on their part, right?
Come on, guys. This is about money and toys.
Yeah, this is clearly about money, this movie. But I got a few more puzzle pieces here. I'll jump from one to the other, and we'll talk about them a little bit and finish it up. But I'm going to go to the Trey Parker, Matt Stone movie, Basketball. which is a ridiculous puzzle piece to include on a Space Jam movie. But let's be honest, they are basically making up the rules of this version of basketball that the kid has created as they go. I mean, none of it makes any sense. The scoring system is completely pointless. It all comes down to a single point game, even though it's thousands of points.
Thousands of points.
None of it makes any sense whatsoever. I feel like they got their scoring and some of the rule book from basketball.
Yeah, that's all I want to say.
That's all. That works there. The other two actually kind of go together, but I'll do them one at a time, though. Have you seen Serenity, the recent one with Anne Hathaway and Matthew McConaughey?
No, but okay. Go off.
I love this movie so much. It's one of the most ridiculous movies of the last few years, and I don't want to speak too much about it because I don't want to spoil it. I guess I'm going to have to spoil it to talk about it. You know what? I'm going to leave it. Everybody, watch Serenity. It's fantastic. I don't want to spoil the ending for you. Please watch it. It is the most ridiculous movie built upon a big twist that I think fits really well with Space Jam. So I'm just going to leave it at that and instead just go to my final puzzle piece. And that is the recent Jumanji reboots.
Yes. So glad you brought that up. Oh, that almost made it into my pieces. Awesome. Please. Yes.
Absolutely. I mean, these people are essentially stuck in this video game world. They're sucked in somehow into this world of video games that, okay, here's the thing. I had a lot of fun with the Jumanji reboots. Those movies are surprisingly a lot of fun as far as action movies are concerned and kid family adventures are concerned. But they don't really have any idea how video games work. I don't think they just kind of, they take bits and pieces of what they thought video games are and stuck them together into this big CGI adventure fest, and it works as it does. Here as well, the game that LeBron's kid Bill is basically a video gameized version of basketball, like we said with basketball. It uses all of its own rules and it's all kinds of things that resemble basketball but aren't quite basketball, and essentially are just a big over-the-top video game. Jumanji kind of does the same thing. It brings these people into this video game. They have to learn the rules. They learn how the scoring works. They learn how to survive within the world of the game. And there you go. That is where your action takes place. And so
yeah.
I think it definitely had to have been an influence on the direction they took for trying to figure out how to make a new Space Jam when they were putting this together.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, that's... But there are so many good points to, like, the fact that in Jumanji 1, you've got my guy, Robin Williams, killing it, you know, like getting to do that serious and silly. And you don't get to do that in this time. So
right.
Just saying. But you've got a killer cast in Jumanji. I thought it was really great. I'm glad that you brought that up because I thought that was the perfect way to execute. Like, it's not a sequel, but it's like we're nodding to it and we're copying what works.
Right.
It was great.
Exactly. I'm also thinking maybe part of the problem here is we talked about Bill Murray. We talked about Wayne Knight. There's no human sidekick characters in Space Jam and New Legacy. It's just LeBron and the Looney Tunes and his kid.
But his assistant kind of does that, whoever that guy is.
Right.
But at the same time, like LeBron has a best friend producer that is that. In real life. So I was just confused. If people know a lot about him, I'm going to look up that guy because people know him in association with, it's Maverick Carter. Okay. So Maverick is one of the producers on Space Jam A New Legacy. He does a lot of business stuff with LeBron. He's very funny, charismatic. People associate LeBron and him.
Mm-hmm.
So this character was kind of mirroring that. But guess what? You could have just called Maverick Carter.
Sure.
Like, I don't know. I know he's not an actor, but neither is freaking LeBron James.
Right.
If we're trying to stay in the world where people know a lot about this guy and being like, you know, it's like obvious that would be the story. Why would you recreate it with another actor when you could have had the guy who does this stuff with you, who's also producing the film?
It would have added to the whole meta-ness of it all, too, which is the whole point of the movie, really.
Which is where they miss a lot because they called on those two jokes. And I'm like, well, I guess.
Yeah.
So what are you doing, Maverick Carter? Come on.
Seriously. All right. Well, I'm going to go ahead and do the finish puzzle here, and then we'll get into some closing thoughts on Space Jam, A New Legacy. We've got Wreck-It Ralph and its sequel. We've got Ready Player One, Hook, The Lawnmower Man, The Mulan Reboot, the various blank movies, parody movies, Who Framed Roger Rabbit, Basketball, Serenity, which everybody needs to watch. It's so damn insane. And Jumanji, the reboots. This movie, I can't believe we've already gone like almost 45 minutes on it, but there's so much that could be said for it. Are there any other closing thoughts that you had on it?
I just want to say that I really loved truly being in the theater and watching and appreciating a movie where the cast was predominantly like 100% like black leading actors. Mm-hmm. Besides the voice artists, who I'm not going to, you know, try to guess their ethnicity. Like, come on. But I just want to say, like, it was nice to see like every bit of that casting was done with the fact that like, okay, yes, like, this is LeBron's film. Great. Also, like every other character, it's not just going to be like, what if we put LeBron and then a bunch of random white dudes? Like it was, you know, I liked seeing the cast being so well-rounded and especially like Michael B. Jordan coming in for that like hot 2 minutes was some of the best. Yeah, like you said, like the biggest laugh of the film. I just want to say that I look forward to people like rebooting movies when it can work like Jumanji. I think that they just missed on this one, but I was still excited to see it. I wasn't like mad at it. Mm. Like as a big fan of Space Jam 1, I wasn't like, oh man, they just like hurt my feelings. You know what I mean? I was just like, that just wasn't the sequel. It was just a different movie and that's okay. But in the future, like remember what works. Remember like the funny works and remember that like, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. That's my final thought.
There you go. That absolutely makes sense. And yeah, I mean, that is the thing with this movie. And I do think there's a little bit of a sinisterness involved in mining the whole Warner Brothers archive for all these characters and calling that a movie. I mean, it goes back to some of what I was saying with the epic movies and stuff like that. And just referencing this history of film and just calling it a day. And it just feels so lazy. But again, that also goes to what you were saying with rebooting something and remembering to take what works, because that's kind of the point of rebooting something is remembering to take what works. And I don't think that they did any of that here. And it's a shame because there definitely is fun that could have been had with the premise. And Space Jam, the original, like I said, not a great movie, but it's fun for what it is, and it definitely has its moments. And like we said, the soundtrack's great. There's some great Looney Tunes stuff, which, by the way, I should mention, aside from that Michael B. Jordan scene, the other two scenes that made me laugh were both Wile E. Coyote scenes. So I'm kind of hoping for a Wile E. Coyote movie one day. That I will watch and I will be excited for.
Oh, it could happen. Who knows? Yeah. There's time.
He rules. I'm that's my closing thought. Wile E. Coyote rules.
If you want to watch and enjoy LeBron James, truly watch Trainwreck,
right,
featuring
right.
Amy Schumer, him, Mike Birbiglia, Brie Larson. I'm sorry, the cast is stacked. And Bill Hader. And then watch The Shop on HBO. It's him, Maverick Carter, lots of guests. There's a beautiful, one of the final episodes of the pandemic was with Chadwick Boseman. And it's great. And Tiffany Haddish. So highly recommend if you like him and you want to see him actually be a real person. Watch The Shop.
Awesome. Yeah, good recommendation there. Well, I think that does it for Space Jam. I always ask my guests to recommend something they watched recently. I mean, you just gave a recommendation, but do you have something else you watched recently you'd like to recommend?
You know, I'm rewatching I May Destroy You again. That's okay. Not a film, but I would say that it's like it's a mini series. So I think sometimes it counts awards wise.
Sure. It's hard to tell nowadays. Yeah.
It's hard to tell. I know. When everything's shot so beautifully, you're like, I guess it's a film and it's like 8 hours of like cuts, you know? but yeah, as far as like movies, I haven't seen anything recently that I was like, go watch that. But I'm rewatching I May Destroy You for the like third time and still love it. So highly recommend it if you haven't watched it already, because Michaela Cole was just cast in Wakanda Forever, Black Panther sequel. So just saying, you're going to want to see her because she's incredible.
Yeah, I think I'm going to have to watch that soon. I have not watched it yet, but awesome. Grace, thank you so much for doing the show. Why don't you tell people again where they can find you and your podcast?
Yeah, they can follow me all the time on Twitter and Instagram at It's Grace Aki. GRACEAKI. And then you can listen to my podcast every Sunday. It's Tell Me on a Sunday, wherever you listen to podcasts, Stitcher, your mother's basement, wherever that may be. So thank you so much for having me, David. This was great.
I'm Josh Bell.
And I'm Jason Harrison. We co-host a podcast called Awesome Movie Year.
Each season, we take a look back at an awesome year for movies, which is every year.
We deep dive into these specific years and we pick out why they were such great years for films. We go over the biggest hits, the biggest flops, the best picture, some personal picks, some cult classics.
Years we've covered in past seasons include 1994, 2003, 1977, and 1984, and we've got all of film history to look forward to. So check us out at awesomemovieyear.com or wherever you listen to podcasts. All right, so I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Grace Aki about Space Jam, A New Legacy. As soon as we finished recording, I actually messaged her to tell her that we forgot to talk about the Notorious P.I.G., this movie just has it all, doesn't it? Anyway, I just played the ad for Awesome Movie Year, which is another movie podcast that I produce, which you should check out, which we actually did an episode on the original Space Jam. It was a bonus episode for the 1996 season, so go check that out. You can find Awesome Movie Year wherever you find Piecing It Together. And if you like Piecing It Together, you should be subscribed to Piecing It Together. We are, of course, on all the major podcast apps, on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Pocket Casts, wherever you listen to podcasts, we should be there. Make sure you're subscribed. You can rate and review us over on Apple Podcasts or Podchaser. There's probably some other places you can rate and review us. I don't know. Wherever they are. 5 stars would be awesome. But, you know, just get in touch. Let me know what you think of the show. I love getting feedback. There's been so many new listeners lately, and I just love that the show keeps growing. More people keep listening to it, and I definitely would like to hear what you think of it and what we could do to continue making it better. Or just keep listening and share it. That's awesome. And don't forget, we also have a Patreon, the Produced by David Rosen Patreon, where we post bonus content and advanced episodes and all kinds of cool stuff. Combining content from Piecing It Together as well as Awesome Movie Year and from my music career. So it's just a bunch of bonus content from all the stuff that I work on, the Produced by David Rosen Patreon. It's patreon.com/bydavidrosen. Check it out. If you really like what we're doing here, you know, of course, the listening, the subscribing, the sharing, the rate and review, you do all that for free. But if you want to kick in a few bucks, if you like it that much, check it out. patreon.com/bydavidrosen. Lots of great content on there. I'm actually working on a bunch of music content to go up there soon. So there's going to be a lot going there. Plus another Awesome Movie or bonus episode is going up really soon too. So check all that out. Thank you so much for listening. Let's close this thing up with a piece of music. And I think I'm going to go with, I was kind of thinking, do I have anything basketball related? But I don't think I do. Unless there's something I'm forgetting about. So instead, I'm just going to go with this weird track from my album Head Like Fire. It's upbeat, so it definitely fits the vibe. And it's just really strange. This is one of the weirder tracks that I've included on one of my main David Rosen albums. Part of me has always wondered, like, why did I include this? But to me, it just kind of felt like some of the more experimental stuff of some of the 80s bands that I enjoy. And so that's why I was like, you know, I think it really has a place on the album. And even though it's weird, I think it still fits. And I'm going to close it out with that. So again, the album is Head Like Fire. The song is Out of Everything. Hope you enjoy it, even though it's a little weird for some of my other music. But enjoy it, and we'll be back with more Piecing It Together real soon.
All Points West production, produced by David Rosen in Las Vegas.